Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. The programme's website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been bringing you interviews that I recorded recently at the annual conference of the Computers in Education Society of Ireland, or CESI for short, and this week I bring you another interview from that conference. Derek Breen was a keynote speaker at this year's conference. Based in the Boston area, he is also the author of Scratch for Kids, a book in the For Dummies series. He is an ambassador for Code Week and an instructional designer. I met Derek Breen at the Teach Meet, which was held the evening before the conference began. Given the title of his book, Scratch for Kids, I first asked Derek Breen to tell me what Scratch is.
Scratch is a computer and design programming tool that lets children create video games, digital animation, and all sorts of designs through any web browser. Totally free, and it lets kids program with blocks that snap together like Legos rather than having to type code and be worried about spaces and dashes and brackets and things.
So do they move them around with the mouse?
Yeah, there are libraries, categories of blocks, like, say, motion blocks. If you want to take a graphic and move it across a stage, you could snap a move block and then a rotate block and then snap a loop around it that says forever, so it keeps moving and rotating all around the screen.
So what kind of a finished product might a child come up with having used Scratch?
I've seen everything from sophisticated role-playing games to full-blown broadcast-quality animated stories. Like, there's a really phenomenal story that I'm going to be showing at CESICON tomorrow, created by a 15-year-old young woman in Cape Town, South Africa, who crowdsourced, recruited people from all over the world to contribute to this animated story based on a Scratch game. So originally a bunch of kids get together, they make a game. Because it's web-based, they can share their responsibilities in different countries and different languages. And then they get so into the game, they start creating stories around their own game, which is the coolest.
And why was there a need for this book then, Scratch for Kids?
So that's a great question. In fact, the very first line in the book is, do not read this book. You don't need a book to learn Scratch. And it goes on and on and on, because it was very important to me that children knew right off the bat that they don't need to buy a book by an adult to learn how to use it. Scratch really encourages children to tinker with digital images and code in a way that I'd never seen before. So they can really dive right in and just mess around and put strange images together and come up with surrealistic collages. But it also has a great built-in help system, so they can learn specific skills all within the Scratch interface and LAN. And best of all, kids are increasingly creating their own tutorials about Scratch in Scratch. So going to scratch.mit.edu, children can find tutorials for almost everything. But a different way to answer your question is, a big publishing company said, we'll pay you money to write a book about Scratch. And rather than just saying, no, being modest, I thought, well, okay, if I'm going to write a book, maybe it should be a book about sort of deeper projects and also the type of projects that I hadn't seen covered by other books. So rather than writing a computer programming book, which is the part that many books focus on with Scratch and many computer classes focus on, I thought, you know, I haven't seen so many design books for 8 to 12-year-old girls. Could I write a book that looks at how to do things like compositing elements to create a beautiful collage, or creating animals that come to life with a little bit of code, and then gradually building up to more sophisticated projects that I really wanted to make in the 70s and 80s, but couldn't do it with my Commodore 64. I couldn't make Space Invaders and really have it work. But now, within a few hours, kids can create really sophisticated arcade games. So every game in the book is a game that I enjoyed playing as a kid and really wished that I could make when I was 11 or 12 years old. And now that I'm 45, I had a good excuse. They were paying me to make the games I really wanted to make.
So is the book for the kids themselves, or is it for the adults who mentor them, like teachers or parents?
It was absolutely written for a target audience of 8 to 12 year olds. When I began the book, my niece was 8 and my nephew was 10. So it was a great way for me to have these sort of ideal readers. And I even had my niece and nephew do some of the digital illustrations for the book. Of course, once it gets to market, I'm increasingly finding that adults gravitate to it and really appreciate being able to go through, read an entire chapter and get a sense of how it works. And someone was just telling me yesterday, she read a huge part of the book before even going to scratch because she just wanted to get a little bit grounded. Then she put the book away and made the projects as much as she could from memory and then could flip through it when she needed to. But she felt liberated having spent a little bit of time with the book. And that was kind of surprising and great at the same time.
You mentioned the word design in this book. So that seems to have been as important for you as equipping children with the technical side or the technical knowledge they need to master Scratch.
Yes. I have been very excited to see the increasing role of coding in schools just within the few years with initiatives like Hour of Code and Code Week. But what I was starting to be concerned about is I learned design long before I learned code, and in fact most people do. We call it drawing or coloring or sculpting and all those sorts of things. Design came millennia before we had coding. So the way that I approach code is when I need code, I'd like to learn the code that I need. A good example is if I want to make a turtle walk across the screen in a realistic, somewhat random way, I don't need the code while I'm designing the turtle. As soon as I want the turtle to start moving, that's when it would be helpful to learn a little bit of code. So that's the approach that I used. I always started with design and then gradually added just the code that was necessary to do the thing that I wanted, such as making a comic book superhero speak or think and then changing what they say and what they think over time. Something that is really easy to do in code, but is a lot more time consuming to keep redrawing that panel with the different words and things.
Is the design actually more difficult to learn than the code?
The older you are, the harder it is to learn design. I mean, I think the older you are, the harder it is to learn almost anything. But particularly art and design, what we find is as children progress through a standard sort of state school system, the design thinking is gradually extracted from them. When kids are 7, 8, 9 years old, many of them will raise their hand when you say, who wants to be an artist when you grow up, or who wants to be a storyteller? And as they get older, fewer and fewer hands go up. So one of the things that Scratch does is, even if, say, college students are using it, and increasingly introduction to computer science classes are starting with Scratch, even if it's just for a class or two, it's a way to lower that barrier. So they find if some of those basic computer science principles can be presented in a less intimidating way, far more students actually finish the semester versus the ones that would drop immediately for being too immersed. So bringing design into that means that now I can talk to 18-year-olds, some of whom might have given up on ever being an artist or a designer, but present them with some new tools that enable them to design in a different way. And all of a sudden, even though you might not be confident drawing a circle, much less drawing Wolverine's head with a mask, being able to use these vector tools that are also built into Scratch, you find that there's more of a sculptural way to do design, taking a basic shape like a circle and then bending it and twisting it and nudging things around. And all of a sudden, it's not like drawing where once you draw something wrong, you've got to crunch up the paper, but you can gradually create something that matches what you have in your head.
So it's a lot more than just good colors and the thickness of the line.
Yeah. Although having good colors and the right thickness of the line is a really good starting point. One of the first things that I like to do is just draw a fairly thick black circle and fill it with any light color. And as soon as you do that, it looks professional. There's something about a certain weighted line, and what makes a comic is that sort of black outline. Otherwise, it looks more like a cartoon. So I think it can be really empowering when people of any age suddenly create something as simple as a circle, but that looks like it was done by some professional designer.
You mentioned their Code Week. Mm-hmm. What exactly is Code Week?
Code Week is a grassroots initiative. So it started in Europe, where some folks thought, what if we could come together and transcend borders by having ambassadors from different countries meet, come up with a strategy, and just put up a website with a map on it. The map will have all the countries, and then the ambassador enables people in their country to schedule events around coding, whether it's a workshop or a talk or some kind of just introductory session, or maybe even a rock band that's singing about coding, whatever it might be. But what was great about it is that anybody could volunteer to be an ambassador, and it was really just that factor of showing up. In so many areas of our society, we have to go through a long process, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're the right person to be a cheerleader for some kind of event. So Code Week really enables those cheerleaders to kind of rise to the top. And last year, over 40 countries participated in Code Week, and you were able to see these events pop up on the map in the weeks and months leading up to Code Week. So it's really kind of exciting. And then last year, for the first time, they offered Africa Code Week. Africa Code Week was done a little bit differently. Excited, this group in Ireland that's trying to sort of recharge the use of computers in schools, more creatively doing things like forming a digital youth council, where young people who have mastered some aspect of technology can come together and actually affect change, not just in their school, but in their district and even throughout the country. Really impacting legislation. Some of the people from Excited thought maybe we could develop a curriculum that would be really easy to replicate and use throughout Africa. So the expense of recruiting and flying all these ambassadors from 13 or 15 African countries was a little bit more prohibitive. So what they did instead is they collaborated with SAP, the multinational company like on the scale of Microsoft. So they develop all sorts of corporate software. And they said, would you help us to disseminate Scratch throughout Africa? We want to introduce Scratch to kids. We want to reach 20,000 kids. We think we could do it in 1 week. And SAP not only put in some money, but they said, you know what? This is such a great idea. We're going to have volunteers from throughout our organization all around the world. We'll make them the ambassadors. How about you people in Ireland, you develop the curriculum, you train these volunteers, send them to Africa, and then our ambassadors will train and recruit the ambassadors for next year. And it became this really cool thing. And by the end of the first week of October, they had reached over 83,000 children throughout Africa. And this year, they're expanding it into even more countries. So somewhat different approaches. One is a bottom-up. Another one's a little bit more top-down in terms of taking a corporation and a nonprofit and figuring out a way to collaborate. But both were so successful that now they're starting to merge a little bit more. At least they're going to be offered the same week. So Europe Code Week and Africa Code Week will start on the 15th of October. And people
2016.
That's right, 2016. And now we're starting to recruit people in Russia and China. And so the goal is to make it a global event. I'm really excited about the idea of some kind of educational initiative that happens all at the same time. And maybe there could be some way to cross borders, not just with a tool like Scratch, but with the actual content of what kids are coding with. So I'm not so excited about classes where all kids are just learning code for code's sake, but if it's tied to a passion that they have and or a mystery that they're trying to solve or just trying to have a little more understanding about their neighbors, then this might be a good platform for that.
And apart from the benefits of, you know, so many people working on one project, what's in it for an individual child in terms of what they learn? What should they have achieved by the end of the week? Or do you even think at that level of granularity?
There is no metric. Nobody is saying that the children need to achieve 17 skill badges in 10 days. So it's really more about an initial exposure. So that's one aspect of Code Week. The child that's never been exposed to coding before. It is Code Week, but a lot of what I did is also ring the bell for design during that, making sure that we have beautiful programs, not just functional programs. But I also saw children being empowered. This great example of the 15-year-old young woman in Cape Town, South Africa, who had created animation more sophisticated than anything that I've ever done in my life, much less have in my book. And we were able to showcase her work to this global audience. So we went there expecting to teach children of Africa how to code, but we had children in Africa teaching us things. It just so happened that her younger brother, 12 years old, was showing a very sophisticated way to use Java programming to create artificial intelligence for dinosaurs in Minecraft, something that the high-end SAP developers didn't even know was possible, and particularly to have a 12-year-old kid. And what got even more exciting is the same way that his 15-year-old sister used the web to reach out to collaborators to do music and animation and writing, that her 12-year-old brother used the web to create this collaborative team all around the world so that they could crowdsource this AI for Minecraft dinosaurs. And so I think those are the extremes. And then we have all these people in between. I personally was involved with a number of teacher training workshops in Africa, hoping that if I could increase the confidence of some of the teachers there, that that would be a way to disseminate some of that learning as well. We're talking about hundreds of volunteers and thousands of educators and mentors throughout Africa, and then increasing that on a grand scale, and Europe as well.
And presumably you're hoping that for at least a good percentage of these children, they'll continue it beyond the week.
Absolutely. And I have proof, because on Scratch, it's possible to comment on projects and communicate with other members. So I get these links being sent by children in Cape Town, in Amsterdam, in Moscow. I'm about to go to Vladivostok. It ignites this passion in children to not only share their work, but also to teach each other skills. So my mind is continually blown by the care and attention that children of all ages put into creating Scratch tutorials in particular to teach each other new skills. And this, the user Bubble103, who created this great Scratch animation called Color Divide, she has far more projects that are tutorials than are finished animation projects. So as she's learning, she wants to share what she's learned or some technique that she's discovered. So it gets back to that question, do you need a book to learn Scratch? Absolutely not. And in fact, I'm thinking in smaller and smaller realms, going from book to developing just a deck of cards that give you some of the essentials, and really trying to find more ways to empower children to teach each other, both in and out of school.
How did you get interested in all of this work?
Well, honestly, it goes back to being the 11-year-old kid who's the first one in his neighborhood to get a Commodore 64. One of the great mysteries of my life is I don't know how I knew what a computer was. There must have been commercials on Saturday morning or something, because I was in Boston, and yet it was this computer manufactured in England, and there were none of these computers in my school at that time. I went to a school up to sixth grade with not one computer available to students, so I bought the computer before I'd ever used one in school. But what I really wanted to do with it is to create art, tell stories, and make games, and compose music. It was this sort of tapestry of things. And it was easier to do that with this computer out of the box than it is to do it with modern computers. So you get a modern computer and you need to install software before you can draw something or make music or any of those things. So if you flash forward from about 1982 to 2013, all of a sudden I see that MIT has this new software coming out for kids, or at least this new to me software, new version, that was going to let them do all the things I did with that Commodore 64 in one package. So they could record a podcast in Scratch. They can actually edit the sound wave digitally in Scratch the same way an adult might do in Audacity. They can create vector graphics with the same tools they would use in Adobe Illustrator. They can composite photographs like you would in Photoshop. And then add code, which is something that you can't do in those other three professional applications. So it really reminded me of the Flash authoring environment, or HyperCard back in the 90s, these tools that allowed you to create your own programs and your own apps, but in a way that's accessible to a 7-year-old. Like, just incredible to see what's possible.
So did you ever work in education then? I mean, obviously so much of your work is now in education.
Yeah. Yeah, actually my first job in education was when I was 13. So when I was 12, I took my first computer science class. That was after the summer that I had my Commodore. So I spent a whole summer working with a computer. Then I went to a new school where they had computers, and I got to go and learn. And there was a bit of a step back because I'd spent all this time doing pretty deep level coding, and they don't start with that in seventh grade in 1982 or 83. But by the end of that seventh grade year in the US, 12 into 13 years old, my teacher took me aside on the first day of eighth grade and said, "You've pretty much mastered basic, so you're not really going to be that happy this year. What if you go down the hall to the special ed room and you work with the kids who are a little bit behind on learning?" It turns out that's the only room that had a Commodore 64 in the school. And none of the teachers had Commodores at home. So it meant me, the 13-year-old, went and started working a few times a week with these students. And so many lessons were buried in that. The idea that a teacher would empower a student to teach, to join their profession, especially a boy in the 80s, teaching was not something that most boys aspired to. And in fact, I forgot that lesson for a long time and got really into design. This new kind of computer came out in 1984 that you didn't have to code with anymore. It had a mouse, and you could click on a paintbrush and paint on the screen.
Is this the Amiga?
The Macintosh.
Oh, the Macintosh.
The original Macintosh. That was the day that I got much less interested in code and thought, maybe I could just do design without code. And it took a long time to come back to code. What brought me back to code was the World Wide Web came into being while I was in college. So in college from 93 to 97, never touched a web browser before 93, didn't have email. And by the end of 97, editing digital audio and digital video and doing 3D animation and web design, I really started to see this reconnect between coding and design then. And so what I started to focus on in college was the intersection of education, design, and technology. My thought then was, how do I design software for kids to learn? CD-ROMs were really popular. But I had to wait about another 15 years for Scratch to come along. And then I saw, the kids can make their own software. All I have to do is make the space for the kids, and then they'll make the software to teach themselves and to teach each other. So now I'm really committed to this idea that it's not about me having to bring my knowledge into the classroom and impose it on the kid. If I can create a learning environment that's open for exploration using these sort of constructionist theories where we learn best by making something and reflecting on it and sharing it. And so Scratch has just become one of the best tools for me to be able to do that. And I hope to keep doing that. One of my favorite things to do when I see an elder family member and a young adult and they don't know how to start a conversation, if they're in a household with an Xbox 360, I'll say to the kid, "Do you want to just explain to them what you like the most about the game that you can't pull yourself away from right now?" And all of a sudden, this huge, long dialogue starts, and it becomes like commentary, like sports commentary. But before you know it, it's not just playing the game. They're designing costumes for the characters. They're building a level for a world. And you see the veil being lifted not for the kid, but for the 72-year-old grandmother or for the 36-year-old uncle. And it's kind of magical. So if there's a tool that bridges generations, you got me right there, even if it's just the turtle.
And where would children normally progress from scratch if they become competent in that? Where do they go next?
Well, because each of the blocks corresponds directly to the most popular programming commands in all the major programming languages, it makes it easy to progress. Just today, I was at Bridge 21, this dedicated education space that's tied to Trinity College Dublin. And they were doing this very thing. They used Scratch yesterday, and the goal was to have them do a bit of Python by the end of the day today. So it was so fascinating to see them taking the concepts that they'd learned in this sort of friendlier environment with cartoon characters and things, and then going into a text editor and to see them note the correlations between the two and all of a sudden be able to do something by just typing code that they might have thought was impossible just yesterday. And today it's slightly more possible. And it was also humbling for me because I don't know Python. I wrote about a book about Scratch, and all of a sudden I'm being pulled out of my comfort zone as a 45-year-old author and being forced to learn along with them. And wouldn't you know it, by the end of that few hours, a few of them were teaching me things. And if we as teachers and educators and adults can be emboldened to become students of children, then I think something pretty magical is starting to happen. And I so appreciate having tools that enable me to do that and other educators that inspire me by showing that humility. The best teachers are also the best students. And if we're going into this era of lifelong learning where things are changing too quickly for us to rely on what we learned 4 or 8 or 12 years ago, then we teachers need to become better students, and we need to empower our students to become better teachers. So maybe that's my big idea. I'm going to stick to that one.
And it's an idea that Derek Breen expresses clearly and passionately as he brings this week's Inside Education to a close. You can listen to podcasts of previous Inside Education programs on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me with comments or suggestions to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. And I really do appreciate your messages. Thanks to my guest, Derek Breen, and to the chairperson of CESI, Adrian Webb, and the organising committee of CESI 2016 for their help in setting up the interview. Till the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.